Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up, man?
Brother,
what's up?
Hey, how you doing? Party, man.
Yeah,
I can dig it.
Stop
it.
Right on.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find. Don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
You know we've got to find a way
to bring some love and kiss here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs. Punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on? Yeah, what's going on? Oh, what's going on?
Oh, right on.
Simply called our hair is long.
Oh, you know we've got to
bring some understanding here today. Oh, oh, oh. Pick it back and pick it back. Don't punish me for brutality. Come on, talk to me. Can't see what's going on. Yeah, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on. Ooh.
Right on. Right on.
Right on. How's everybody doing today? This is the Contrarian Corner. And this is Terrence, the last Magnificent Stubbs, and this is my first show. And so we're just going to talk about some things, and I'm just going to tell you a bit about myself. I am a former stand-up comic. I'm a high school teacher now, amongst other things. And I'm a citizen of the world. And what I'm going to do tonight is just introduce myself to you and let you know who I am, what I'm about, and future shows that we're going to be doing. And what we're going to be doing is testing the people in power. We're going to speak truth to power. We're going to let them know that we are here and we ain't going nowhere. And we are going to turn this whole world upside down. And so next week, what I'm going to talk about is critical race theory. I know everybody's, you know, talking about that, but the next week is going to be critical race theory, the new boogeyman. And I'm sure people know what I'm talking about when I say the new boogeyman, because every now and then, you know, the right, and I am saying the right, they come up with these new things to scare people half to death. You guys remember, I know a long time ago when Obama was running, it was the death panels, you know. When they were trying to pass Obamacare, they were saying, oh, you know, they're going to come and they're going to take grandma and they're going to put her in a home and they're going to kill her and this and that and that and this. And, but, you know, this country has a whole history of being afraid. And it started, you know, when they brought all these black folks over here. Brought all the black folks over here, and then it was just too many for them to control. So then they started, you know, what they call nowadays the police, because there's a big connection. There's a big long historical connection with blacks and police. And the first thing is, have anybody ever heard, seen that movie, 12 Years a Slave? If you have, there's a song that the guy sings. It's called Patty Roller. And that was in the 1850s. But Patty Roller is just the new version of it is the paddy wagon. And they just changed the word because a long time ago, that's what it was. It was a paddy wagon. It was a wagon, and it had people running around, rounding up runaway slaves. And they, of course, they didn't have cars back then, so they put them in a wagon. So that's what paddy wagon is. And so fast forward to today, and that's exactly what they have nowadays. They still have a paddy wagon. It just has an engine and a motor and transmission and stuff like that, but it's still a paddy wagon. And I can see where their fear comes from, because when you do people wrong and when you cause so much havoc to everybody that you have come in contact with, be it the slaves, be it the Native Americans, be it the Chinese, everybody has had to pay blood, sweat, and tears in this country. And for what? For what? It's crazy. Because let me give you guys a little history lesson. 1619. Anybody know what 1619 means? Well, I'm going to let you know. 1619 was the year that the first slave ship hit the shores of America, or what it was America. And those slaves weren't even called slaves, really. They were called indentured servants, servants. And when they got here, they were also with some whites who had come from the old country, and they were quote unquote equal. But what happened is that there was these two unindentured servants, white unindentured servants, and then there was a black unindentured servant, and they all ran off, you know, because they wanted to be free, so they ran off, and they got caught, of course, So the two whites unindentured servants, they got sentenced to 4 extra years of servitude. The black unindentured servant got sentenced to a lifetime of servitude. And the white unindentured servants, not only did they get more time, but they also got, I think it was 20 lashes each, just to let them know that you don't be cohorting around with no black guy. And that's how that stuff started. That stuff started with that situation right there. They had to show them that even if you're white and poor, you're still better than that dark-skinned person. And, you know, we see that every day. We see that all the time. We see it every day. And we always try to adhere to their way of life and their rules, but we're never going to fit in. We are never going to fit in. We're always going to be a second-class citizen. It doesn't matter if you're black or white. It's a class thing. It's a class thing now. And somebody asked me one time, do you think that we will ever come together as black people like we did during the civil rights movement? I said, no, we won't. And they said, well, why not? Why don't you think that we would be better off if we got together again like they did during the civil rights movement? I said, because it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And they said, why? And I said, because during the civil rights movement, you had the biggest black star in the world, Sammy Davis Jr. He couldn't walk into the front door of a hotel in Vegas where he was headlining. You had Dorothy Dandridge, who was one of the most beautiful stars in the world. She had just done Porgy and Bess. And she had just done, I forgot the name of that movie she was in with Halle Belafonte. Carmen. Carmen, I can't remember. If it comes to me, I'll bring it up again. And she couldn't swim in a pool. She couldn't swim in a pool. So what I'm trying to say is, with the classism that's going on, it doesn't matter. Jay-Z, he can go into a store. He's not going to get harassed because he's at a certain class level. Now, me, I could get harassed. I could get followed around. But unless it gets the way it was when we were younger, I mean, back in the civil rights era, when Sammy Davis Jr. couldn't get into a hotel, then Joe Blow couldn't either. If Dorothy Dandridge couldn't swim in the pool, then Sister Susie couldn't either. So that's just how it was. It was just like that. But nowadays we have money and class that separates us. So we're not equal. There are certain things that they can do to make us equal. They can use the criminal justice system to equalize us out. And because if they really, really want to get somebody, it doesn't matter how much money you have, they'll get you. And they can put you in the same prison that they'll put me in. But you just have to be slick enough or have a lawyer that's sly enough to get you out of it. Now, that's the biggest situation right there, is that I would probably have to get a public defender if I was coming up on some big charges that I really wanted. But I'm not even going to beat those charges because the public defender and the judge and the prosecutor are probably buddies and they go out drinking. And so they're going to set up a little deal with me and say, hey, you know what, set up a little deal with that dude. Let him go ahead and plead, because, you know, we need people in the prison. 20 people got out last week. We need to replace those 20 people because, you know, that's money that we ain't making. But, you know, if you got money to have resources, then you can have somebody like Jay-Z do something crazy. He'll get a lawyer. And next thing you know, he'll beat the case. So, you know, it's pretty rough. It's pretty rough out here. It's hard out here on a pimp. But I do want to say that I appreciate everybody for listening to this show. And if you keep listening, you're going to learn something. I guarantee you, every week you're going to learn something. Like I said, next week we're going to talk about critical race theory. The week after that, I think we're going to talk about 1619. It's going to always be something, you know, thought-provoking, headline-grabbing, and something that will also help you to learn. It'll help you to, you know, become a better person. And I think once we get all this together, and because like I said, this is me. This is who I am. And if anybody wants to call in and ask me some questions about myself, feel free to call in. And what we are going to do is we're going to take a real quick commercial break, and then I'm going to promote some of the other shows that we have. So the show that another show that comes on here is called Peppy and Snap, and I'm going to play a little bit of Peppy and Snap, and I'll be right back with you on the other side.
Our dream alive is making it out the street line. We passing through this life like it's a green line. Before we go to war, we get our cash right. We pray and live our life like it's our last night.
We ain't the feds, what does that mean? Ain't taking no prisoners. Come to the pad, what is it we have? Them bullies is his and hers. You skin with us, if you just like us, you know ain't no prison hurt. We train them to go, you think that they slow, you get your feelings hurt. You must have forgot, before all of this, all we ever did was dirt. We changed for a lot, but for a lot, we put in quicker work. You met a real dude, you wasn't real too, the reason it didn't work. Had you kept it 100 with us, you would be over where we were. Now you trapped in the street, the rest of the life, while we in the cinema. You got a red jacket, we got a black buffer, feels better than killing ya. They asked me why I left you alive and put you in a hearse. I told them it's cause I'm a Muslim and stunned right in front of them, hurts even worse. Went out like a bra, turn in your car, I should carry your purse. I had the same choice, but I'd rather die than put on a skirt. You government witness, I witnessed the government put you to work. You wearing a wire, I wearing a powder, I bit on a shirt.
Our dream alive is making it out the street line. We passing through this life like it's a green line. Before we go to war, we get our cash right. We pray and live our life like it's our last night.
Me and the homies been to the pen, we swear we ain't going back. But we ain't doing no tellers, we'll let you fill in the blank for that. If fans is listening in for me, they know this shit ain't a rap. As long as they killing like this in my city, they give me the right to carry a strap. So what I'm a felon, I can't protect family, I ain't going for that. I'ma protect them, whoever don't like it, I even got some for that. I know the truth, so keep it moving, what is the meaning for that? Come over here, trying to be bullied, we in the bullying back. Graduated the streets with honor, die for giving them back. What does that mean? You see me dead, the city feds making me crap. As a matter of fact, the homies I got, the type that'll kill you for that. That's why we retract and show you our back, save us from having you whack. Legitimate millions headed to billions, we will be ignorant for that. Instead of regret, build a close-knit circle and keep it intact. We trace you back to your roots for proof you could be a rat. Though me and my dogs is out of the streets, you still ain't our type of cat.
Our dream alive is making it out the street line.
We passing through this life like it's a green light. Before we go to war, we get our cash right. We pray and live our life like it's our last night.
Last but not least, we send you away. You real, you still enough. The secret to getting some millions with us is keeping it real with us. You faking and thinking ain't showing food, you know the difference is. We know how I feel, it being a jail, facing like fantasies. Cause we refuse to watch them starve, they call us menaces. Our justice is done in the street cause it won't be known when they sentence us. Matter of fact, when they sentence us, have every intention of ending us. So my attention is hold the proceedings before I ever get in the cuff. Cause they'll kill you out in the cuff. Lying say she wasn't giving up. Their definition of giving up is let them do all they want to us. No matter how peaceful, it's not enough. The last one was peaceful, shot him up. So why even try? I might as well shoot. If he gon' lie, say that I had a gun. So what is the difference of having one when you still gon' kill me for having none? I might as well have it and play it by ear in case you the type that I pull it on. If this you the type that I pull it on, I care less about the uniform. It's easy to leave me the way that you need me, and neither one of us is going home.
Our dream of life is making it out the street line. We passing through this life like it's a green line.
And we are back to the Contrarian Corner Radio Show. Hello, it's me, Terrence, the last magnificent subs. Yeah, so, you know, we talked about a few things before the break. And we're going to have a whole, I'm going to tell you something. There's never a, loss of things to talk about. Because there's so much, so many things going on in this world. I mean, it's just so much things going on in the world. I mean, honestly, if you saw the news today, and I saw it yesterday, about the two little girls at Sesame Place, that was some wild shit. But, you know, I don't go with what the person who's in the costume said, that, oh, with the costume on, we don't. That my visibility was off. But you know what? He did shake the little white girl's hands, and they were about the same height as the little black girl's hands. And he gave the one lady a high five. And, you know, the little girls, I feel sorry for them, and I'm sure they're hurt a little bit. But you know what? They'll get over it. They'll get over it because there's bigger things they're going to have to deal with when they get older. They're just going to have to deal with get used to it. But we can always figure out ways, you know, hit them in the pockets. And right now they have a lawyer, they're suing, and they'll probably settle a little money, you know. And you know what, it might even pay for their college education, you know, somebody being stupid. But we're going to talk about that stuff. We're going to talk about these racist cops. That's going to be on the show one day, because I'm just at the point where I just don't think cops care. They don't care. Because whenever they see a camera, whenever they make a stop, all they have to do is, well, matter of fact, if you know you just stopping somebody on some bullshit, then don't stop them. But you know that if you stop somebody on some bullshit, got a camera out, then your ass is in a world of trouble. But they don't care. That's what it is. They don't care. Because if that's just like me walking into a 7-Eleven and there's cameras all over the place, and I just go in there, you know, with my name and phone number on a T-shirt, said, hey, here I am. So, you know, it just doesn't make sense to me, you know. But the thing that does make sense is the fact that they don't care. They don't care. That's all of it in a nutshell. Because if they cared, they would see the camera and say, oh, okay. Especially if they're putting you up for some shit. Okay, sir, well, you know what? Have a nice day. We're just going to go ahead and let you go now. Instead of, you know, taking it to the next step, taking it to another level. because their tactics are they're supposed to de-escalate. And a lot of them don't de-escalate. They escalate. And what they do is they make the situation worse. Just today, just today on the local news, it's so funny. I was looking at the local news, and this guy a few weeks ago, police came into his house. He was having a mental emergency, and they tased him, rushed him down. He said he couldn't breathe. He died. And then they said that it was a homicide. But in the next sentence, they said, well, just because it's a homicide don't mean somebody got killed. I said, what the fuck are you talking about? These are the people on the news. They said, well, you know, it doesn't really mean somebody got killed. I said, homicide is a murder. It's a murder. Somebody got killed. But they try to play these tricky little words with people because when it involves the police. Because I'm telling you, I'm going to be prepared for my next show, and I'm going to have clips. I'm going to have, maybe I can even try to have some video. Maybe I can try to do that. But I'm definitely going to have clips, audio clips, about all this stuff that's going on because I hear stuff, and sometimes that stuff goes over people's head. I mean, I'm not saying I'm woke, but I will just say that I'm conscious. And I think there's a real big difference in being conscious and being woke. Woke is just something new, you know, it's a new slogan, stay woke and all that kind of stuff. But I'm talking about having a deep-rooted consciousness, you know, that you can dig and you can get into all this stuff. You can just, you know, filter out all this bullshit and get to the meat and potatoes of the situation. Because I'm telling you, you know, when you are conscious, your mindset just goes to a whole different level. It does. It just goes to a whole different level. Your mindset is just, you know, it's way up there. Like I was just telling an ex-friend of mine, I was like, you know, what I want to do is, we were having a deep conversation. Well, it wasn't that deep, but we were having a conversation. I was having a deep conversation. He was just rattling off about some shit. And I said, you see that? That's what the difference is with me and you. I'm trying to get to the damn moon. You're just trying to get across the street. And he got mad and start cussing and slobbering and stuff, but I'm like, man, my level, I'm trying to take you to the moon, and you just trying to just point, and you trying to get across the street. See, that's the difference in consciousness. You know, you have to be able to dig, and you have to have a little book learning too. I got like 1,000 books, maybe more than that, and I love my books. And you know, people don't sit down and read books anymore. They don't. They just, I mean, if it's not in a tweet, if it's longer than 200 characters, oh man, they'll give up after 100 characters. That's probably about 20 words. They just give it up. I mean, I hardly ever see anybody sit down and take a big old book and just read it, a novel or sociology or some psychology or some history. They just don't do it. Reading is, it's fundamental, but reading is a dying art form. Because I'm going to tell you something. Writing is a dying art form. Like, well, When I say writing, I mean curses. That's a dying art form, because I'm telling you, I'll work at a school and these kids these days, they don't know how to write in cursive. They don't. They don't know how to write in cursive. They don't know how to tell time analogy, like an analog time. Oh, yeah, you can look at your phone or whatever and get the time. But I'm talking about, can you look at a clock face and say, yeah, that's 1:53. Now, that's 3:37. Heck no. I've done it because in my classroom, I take the kids' phones and I'll ask them randomly, hey, what time is it? And they're looking at me and they're looking at the clock and they're looking at me and they're looking at the clock and they're looking at their friends. And then they'll say, oh, can I get, no, I'm asking you what time it is. Tell me. They can't do it. And, you know, I was like 4 years old when I learned how to tell time. I remember my big mama took me downtown on the bus to Woolworths. Yep, I'm that old. She took me to Woolworths and bought me a Mickey Mouse watch. We got on the bus. It was about a half hour, 45-minute ride home because we had to catch two buses. But by the time that I got back to Big Mama's house, I could tell time. I could tell the like the 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, you know. I had to take my little finger and I had to count like 5, 10. And then after, you know, I figured out that, it took me about another day to figure out how to, you know, get the small numbers like 1206, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10, and of course, you know, I can count, so, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18. So, you know, it took a couple of days, but that's something that I have learned, and it's carried me on all these years, you know. And nowadays, like I said, it's an art form. You learn how to tell time on a face clock. You just, they don't even put them in classrooms anymore. They don't even put clocks in classrooms because they don't need to, because they wouldn't be able to read them anyway. That's a damn shame. But I'm going to take another like 2 minute break here, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring in, you know, the kingpin of this whole situation, and we're going to talk about Yizer.com. So I'll be back in 3 minutes and 32 seconds.
It's not that I don't want you here. Yeah. It's something about the way you stare into my eyes. I know that I don't make things clear. I fall for you every time I try to resist you. We can get away. Palm trees, beach views, golden every day. All I wanna hear is in the pictures on replay. Sit right next to you. You.
All right. We are back. And so what I'm going to do is do a little house cleaning here, a little information. This is Yizer.com. And what I want to let you know is Yizer.com is looking for product vendors that want to sell their products or services on the YizerTV.com shopping channel. Must have a business license to apply. And to get these details, just call 847-232-9368 and hit option 2. And a couple other things that we need to do that I want to tell you about, put you on game about. And that is, we got some things coming up. Testimony Tube in association with Stephen Lester Filmworks presents its first Testa movie. I guess that's people doing testimonies, but it's going to be a movie.
Correct.
So, and it's called Lifesaver. A must watch for considering, if considering abortion. Okay, that's relevant. And another thing we have is Testimony 2. And that will give you a little more information about that. But the movie is going to be, should have got this together, ladies and gentlemen, before I started talking here. But I'll just tell you, you can purchase. It's going to be Sunday, August 21st. It's going to be at 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. You can purchase tickets online, lifesavermovie.eventbrite.com. You can pay Cash App. You can pay, You can pay either on the site, or you can pay through Cash App. And the Cash App is $ the Testimony Tube. And when you do that, add your full name and time you're going to come. And back to our regular scheduled program. So I've touched on a whole bunch of different subjects here. And, you know, when we do this show next week, like I said, this is the Contrarian Corner. And if anybody can tell me what contrarian means, I will do something for you. I don't know what it is, but I'll think of something to do for you or something to give you. Just if you listen next week, well, no, when you listen next week, let me, you can look it up anytime you want, but let me know what contrarian means, and then you'll see what the basis of this show is going to be about, the Contrarian Corner Radio Show. And this is Terrence, the Last Magnificent Stubbs. And getting ready to settle down here with me is brainchild behind this whole organization. We're sitting here in the compound, and this brother is making things happen. He's a one-man Ringling Brothers Barnum Bailey Circus. And this is...
whatever you want to call me. Whatever you want to call me, brother.
Just don't call you late for dinner.
Right.
And, yeah, so...
how you doing? This is Abernathy. How y'all doing?
Mr. Abernathy, and he's somebody that, you know, he's a mover and a shaker. And I'm telling you, this is, you know, this is something that's going to blow up. It's going to... I don't want to say it's going to be the next Netflix or the next Facebook or the next Home Shopping Network. This is going to be the first Yizer. And, you know, people are going to be 10, 15 years now, they're going to be saying, oh, man, you know. Right on. Right on. I should have been on that myself. Yeah, but yeah, we, you know, Mr. Abernathy is, he kind of reminds me, and that's another show we're going to talk about. He kind of reminds me of this early 1900s filmmaker, Oscar Michaud. He was a visionary. He was making films. He was the first black director. And the movie studios wasn't selling film stock, which was what you need to make films. So he would just go and find used rolls of film in garbage cans and behind the studios and use that. That's why when you look at some of his movies, some of the movies, because I've seen almost all his movies, and all his movies were, almost all his movies were from books that he had read, I mean, that he had written. And The Homesteaders, the very first book that he wrote, and he went door to door selling his books so that he could fund his film. That's why he had to steal film, and he had to teach himself how to process it and everything so that he could. And that's how, why you look at some of his old films, it's not because it's old. It's because some of the film was damaged by sunlight. And some of the films, they found one of his films in somebody's attic or basement. No, in somebody's basement, and it had been water damaged. And the National Film Archives, they took it and they restored it. It took them years to restore it. But, you know, Mr. Abernathy is like Oscar Michaud. He, you know, making a way out of, he's bringing all this, because I can't think of anybody who in this city that's doing this. And the closest person of color, black person that I can think of as doing something like this is Byron Allen. And he is shaking it up. You know, they didn't come, almost like Oscar Michaud, they didn't want to sell him the Weather Channel. They said, what's this black dude going to do with the Weather Channel? But now he has, how many channels does he have now?
Byron Allen?
Uh-huh.
Good question. Because I know he owns the Weather Channel. Now I can find out real quick.
Mm-hmm. But Byron Allen, he has, and he just recently sued McDonald's because he found out that McDonald's has like $250 million advertising budget, and black businesses are only getting like about $5 million of that. And he's like, hey, wait a minute. This don't seem right here. Y'all got all this money, but he doesn't want to advertise on black radio. Well, they do advertise on black radio, but it's not like what NBC, CBS, and all that other stuff. It's not what they're doing. Okay, yeah, so, you know, so Allen, he owns one of the largest cases. So he moved past station. He has a network, and it has 10 24-hour HD television networks, Weather Channel, Comedy TV, Cars TV, ESTV, Central Justice, no, Justice Central TV, My Destination TV, Pets TV, Recipe TV, and you can find all those. And and next week I'll let you know just a little information about Byron Allen. But that is what Yizer. That's the future of Yizer. To have Yizer TV, Yizer Radio, Yizer Shopping Channel, Yizer Food Channel. You know, we're doing big things. Big things. And I'm telling you, you better get on in. You better get on in. And so I'm going to let the Kingpin tell you a little bit more about Yizer. And this is Mr. Abernathy.
What's up? What's up, man? What's up? Welcome, man. Welcome to the family.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
The last magnificent is in the building. Yeah. What's up with you, man?
Man, I'm just, you know, this is really, you know, this feel comfy, man. You know, it's just like riding a bike. I did radio back in San Diego. And this is a quick little story to just let you know you can do anything you want to do if you put your mind to it. So I was taking some radio. I was taking some radio classes at San Diego City College. And so I said, let me just see if I can get an internship. So I got an internship. And what I was doing promotion. And anybody who works in radio know that promotion is the low man on the totem pole. That's dude who would come out there before everybody get there and set up the tent, pull out the flyers and the T-shirts and people begging you for this and begging you for that. And then you got to stay till everybody's gone and take the tent down and load everything up in the van. And then you got to take it to the station, unload it from the station, and then you can go home. So what happened was I was an intern, and there was this white cat named Bart. And he was having some girl issues, and he was missing a whole bunch of work. And so one day we had this big old event at the San Diego Pride, and the station director came to me, and she said, "Where's Bart?" I said, "Oh, no, I'm waiting on Bart right now." She said, "You got your license?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "Can you drive?" I said, "Yeah, I can drive." She said, "Well, take the van here." She threw me the keys. She said, Take the van, go set up. Just ask the people at the gate where to pull up at and where you set up at. I went there, set up everything, and the station manager, she came and saw everything all set up, and I was running the whole thing by myself. So she said, "You know what? You are starting Monday. You're the promotions director." So I did that for about maybe 6 months. I had me a couple of interns. Then at the time I was doing stand-up comedy, and so we did a show. I did a show at the Comedy Store in La Jolla, and it just so happened that the Magic 92.5 morning show was there doing a promotion, and so they saw me up on stage, and I got to admit, I was killing it. I got off stage. "Terrence, I didn't know you did stand-up." I said, yeah, I don't tell anybody. She said, "Well, nobody." I said, I just don't. So she said, well, why don't you be our morning show producer? And so I said, well, what does that entail? She said, well, just be at the radio station at 4 o'clock in the morning. I said, 4 o'clock in the morning? She said, yeah, well, we start getting everything together at 4 because we go on air from 6 to 10. I said, all right. So I went ahead and started doing that. And then next thing you know, they start moving me into doing a little crazy stuff on air and everything. I started off just getting the commercials together and getting the music together and calling guests and getting it set up and all that. And after a while, you know, they had me doing crazy stuff. I remember one time they had me, it was a voting day. It was a Tuesday and they were voting in San Diego. And they had me going to the voting booths with no pants on.
What you mean no pants? Like you was swinging?
No. I had some boxers on.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I had some boxers on. And so the security guard stopped me at the door. All this is playing on the radio. Of course, it was a five-second delay because ain't no telling who might say what. But it was playing on the radio, and the guy said, oh, what are you doing here? I said, well, I'm voting. He said, well, you need to have some pants on. I said, are you trying to say that I can't practice my constitutional right to vote? He said, no. So we went back and forth. So finally, I let him in on the thing, and, you know, he had a big laugh out of it. And I think the other craziest thing I did was they had me going to a Walmart, and they had some beds laid up, you know, on display. And they had me just, you know, go in there with some pajamas on and get in the bed with a big teddy bear. And they were trying to wake me up, and I'll pretend like I was sleeping. So finally, I let them out the hook when they said, security, can you come over into the linen section? So I got up and let them off the hook. But then after a while, people started knowing who I was, and they would see me, and they said, oh, no, get the hell out of here, you know. So, But it all started like that. And, you know, I say that to say, you know, you can do anything you want to do if you put your mind to it. What you think about that, Mr. Abernathy?
All right, man, I love it, bro. That's, like you said, like when you first started, I say, man, you done this before. So you got a story to tell, man, and I'm glad. As a matter of fact, let's toast, bro. Welcome to the Yarzer family, sir. You've been around for a while. You've just been behind the scenes.
Thank you.
He's actually the producer and cameraman for the Culture Kings television show.
Yep.
The Last Magnificent, you guys have probably heard him, you know, on Culture Kings. So now he's coming out the shadows and, you know, spread his knowledge, man. I'm glad you're here, bro.
I sure appreciate you.
Needed you, man.
For giving me opportunity in the platform to try to spread some wisdom and some love around here. You know, we got a lot of stuff going on. You know, it seems like every week there's a shooting or something, you know.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I had a question on something you talked about earlier. I gotta ruffle some feathers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I gotta ask the question.
Yeah.
Now, why are the black people upset about this Sesame Street thing? Like really, like, cause the puppet and Muppet or whatever didn't shake a little girl's hand or something?
Yeah.
Are we really that sensitive? So I'll make sure I'm clear here.
Mm-hmm.
So we can do and say whatever we want, but as soon as somebody else does us, we automatically scream racism? Like, so that was racially, so I want to make sure I'm clear here, but that was racially motivated. Because that puppet, Muppet, or whatever didn't shake those little black girls' hands. So now we're in an uproar. I just want to ask that question.
Yeah, we're in an uproar.
Wow.
I mean, me, myself, like, I was looking at CNN today, and Don Lemon said, well, you know what? They're kids. They'll get over. It's not a big deal. That's not the biggest thing they're going to deal with in their life and in this world. This world is rough. They're going to have to deal with rejection some type of way. But, you know, I felt a little way because I got a daughter, and if somebody would did my daughter like that and saw the look on that little girl's face when she was like, well, you know, she couldn't verbalize it, but the look on her face was like, you just shook that little white girl's hand.
So me doing the Yizer thing. So if that's the case, why don't we have that same smoke when them little boys and little girls in the neighborhood see the dead body?
See, that's what I'm talking about. Like, mm-hmm. we worried about that, yeah. a Muppet.
Yeah.
But we don't got that same smoke when there's a killing in every neighborhood and the little kids in the neighborhood. I've seen a documentary
mm-hmm.
with these little kids. It was in Harlem, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And they talking about they so used to seeing dead bodies at the age of 9 or 10. So it seemed like we should be focusing on that.
Yeah.
First, some damn Muppet puppet that didn't shake some little girl's hand. I guarantee you. Them kids in them neighborhoods is well more traumatized hearing gunshots every night or hearing seeing people dead versus that damn Muppet or puppet walking down the street.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
No,
I'm quiet now.
You know what? No, you're right. You're right. You know, that is definitely more traumatizing. I mean, it's more traumatizing. It's traumatizing, you know, being in the car with your father getting pulled over by the police. You know, that's sometimes that's the first, you know, contact little black kids have with the police is when they, you know, got that light, shining that light in their face, and you sitting up there, you know, you just trying to play your video game. And your father getting snatched out the car and handcuffed, sat on the curb and questioned, didn't let go, just like that old Richard Pryor joke. You know, police pull over, the white couple, hey, how you doing there, Mr. Thompson? Oh, yeah, license, registration, oh, here you go. And then pull over a black guy. Get out the motherfucking car. He's getting it. Just going crazy on him. And then and then he says, shit, you don't even want to go out to dinner. You don't want to go fuck. You don't want to do nothing. You just go home, you know.
Right.
You know, because that was from Richard Pryor's classic CD. Well, it wasn't no CDs out there then. No, that was That Nigga's Crazy.
Oh, okay. You know what's so crazy? Speaking of that nigga crazy, so, you know, Tana B does a show on Tuesday nights, and most of our people are comedians, and you're also a comedian, too. That's the one thing I love about Yairzy. We have a lot of comedians. We're pretty much a comedian. This is so crazy. Believe it or not, Yairzy is actually ran by comedians. Like, we are really a comedy situation, but we're not buffoons.
Right,
and that's
right.
The difference, right?
Mm-hmm. We're not Bert Williams.
Yeah. And we were talking about the top five comedians. And I said to her, and a lot of people, and I wasn't being all disrespectful, but I never thought Richard Pryor was funny.
Oh, man.
I liked his movies. And then, but I put it to the point of, because I was young, and I guess I didn't really get the humor in his stand-up. And then, but I'll respect, Richard Pryor is the GOAT. He
mm-hmm,
is the GOAT.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, you know, I don't know why. It's like, Martin, Dave Chappelle, but I know I come from different generations mm-hmm. too, though. But Richard Pryor, I love all his movies. Like, one of my favorite, all-time favorite movies that Richard Pryor. Listen, y'all, if y'all having a movie night for my funeral, when I die, I want everybody to have a movie night and a party. And blaze, and I don't even blaze, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want you to play, what's the Richard Pryor movie? Is it Grease Lightning? Race car driver with his window. Race car driver. He was a stock car driver. I think it's called Grease Lightning. Richard
I think
Pryor.
It was Grease Lightning, yeah.
Man, that, you know, that's one of my all-time favorite movies,
wow.
Bro. Man,
I'm
going to
look at that movie again.
I love that movie. So, yeah, so if y'all have a movie night at my memorial service, play that movie, please. All right.
Yeah, well, you know, Richard Pryor, he was, I think maybe because in my generation, we listened to Richard Pryor. My parents listened to Richard Pryor on Friday nights. My father was, and his friends and stuff was drinking and stuff. And Richard Pryor taught me how to cuss.
Okay.
You know, I mean, you know, you just didn't learn how. I mean, you didn't just cuss. He was poetic with cussing.
Yes, he was.
You know, like when he's talking about all well. And old Wells put his got mad and all well pushed him he said he put his hand in his chest. Said he put his hand in his chest and he let him go, and then he said he was sitting there and had his fist balled up. Almost crying, and he says, "Oh well," said, "Motherfucker, put your hand down." and then when his father was telling him about, you know, coming home, he said, "I don't care what the niggas gonna do in the corner. You have your ass home by 11. You can't tell time, can't you, nigga? The clock, motherfucker, what the clock say?"
That shit is classic, man. I mean, when you was at the bus stop in the morning and you listened to everybody and listened to Richard Pryor, by just motherfuck this and motherfuck that.
Do you think in today's world, you know, I used to do comedy albums or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Are you think in today's world you can still do that? That people tune in and listen to like a comedy, like audio, like say, you know how you do stand up, but they just release the audio of it. You think people still tune in to audio comedy?
You know, I don't know, because it's such a visual world now. You know,
okay.
I just don't know. I mean, if you did a podcast, maybe. Do it on a podcast, do it on, you know, like I did some stand up on NPR radio because City College had a radio station. It was 88.1, and that was a public access. It was not public access. It was a NPR station. And we get away with a whole bunch of stuff because we did poetry and comedy and stuff at nighttime. But I just don't know if they would, people would really listen to it. They want to see it, you know, nowadays.
So you have to mix in like the podcast type of thing, kind of like how you do now. So do you still consider yourself?
Yeah, I'm a retired comedian.
You retired?
Yeah.
Would you ever come out of retirement?
You know, I'm kind of.
You know what you are now?
What?
You are a comedic personality.
Yeah, maybe I guess you could say that. I'm kind of like what, you know, the reason why Eddie Murphy, he won't do no more stand-up. And a lot of people, when they start doing, you know, you got your exceptions. You got Chris Rock. You got Dave Chappelle. You got Kevin Hart. You got people who, they love stand-up.
Yeah.
They get that rush, but even though, kind of like Eddie Murphy, he said one time, he said, man, that shit is terrifying.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. And I remember a show I did when I started doing comedy. I was going to these little white clubs. They had an open mic down at the Holiday Inn on 21st and Shaven a long time ago. And I was going in there, and I was going to these little comedy workshops. And I had all these people they were helping me write my material, all, you know, and they was giving me all this little corny stuff. It was corny. And I'm telling you, when I got Thomas Sparkle Socks Griffin.
Remember him.
He let me open up for the K-9 Posse.
I remember that's Eddie Murphy's brother.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I had been killing it at the little white clubs, killing them. They were cracking up, laughing, falling on the floor, and throwing their drinks in the air. I said, shoot, I'm ready for the big time now.
Right.
And so I went out there, and Thomas Griffin gave me $25 and all the chicken wings I can eat.
That's what they paying comedians right now. It's 2022.
Yeah. And this was, I got that because what I did, he gave me $25. I went to the bank. I took that $5 bill, and I got a crispy-ass $1 bill, and I took it, framed it, and it was April 2nd, 1992, I think. And so I went up there, man, and did those old stale-ass, corny-ass jokes that I've been doing at the little white places and stuff, man, and they booed me off the stage.
I know they did.
So bad. They booed me so, I mean, I was like, this can't be happening. That stuff was killing, man. Monday at the hotel.
Wednesday, and he was bombing.
This was like the following Friday.
The following Friday, and you bombed.
Bombed. And so what I had to do is I said, okay, you know, I ain't going back to those clubs anymore. Okay. I said, I'm going to just take some. I took some time off, and I was working as a sheet metal worker. And I had a little bitty old notebook I kept in my little pocket, and I just started writing funny shit that I thought was funny. I just started writing shit. And I was writing shit and writing shit and writing shit. It took about 3 months. Then I heard there was this little black comedy show coming out. And so I called, because I worked with Gino and Amp. And I do it because I would do anything for anything. And that was one of my jokes. I said, I'll do any motherfucking thing for any motherfucking thing. I'll do whatever. And this one joke that I wrote, I'll never forget. It got me the biggest laughs. I was talking about how rough it was. And I said, it's so rough out here. When I pay cash, motherfuckers still ask me for 2 pieces of ID. And I said, that was one of my favorite jokes. And I wrote that shit. And then when I went out there on that that little black comedy show, I can't remember who did it. It was Guy Black or somebody. I said, okay, this is my shit. When I was backstage, I said, okay, this is all my shit. Then nobody helped me write this but me. And boom, I went out there and killed them.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Killed them. And, you know, I went out there. First thing I did, you know, I studied, you know, a lot of comics. And the first thing I did was went out. I was looking behind stage, and I said, you know, this crowd, they want you to, you know, talk about folks. So I was looking around. I saw this dude with those stingy-ass three-piece suit on. I came out there, and he had a damn curl and stuff, and I started getting on his ass. And he was laughing. Everybody, his date was laughing. And, man, I tell you, then I jumped into my routine, and that was it. It was all over. Right. All over. And then after that, I got booed a few times. I got booed at this motorcycle club once. I got booed in Atlanta.
You got booed in ATL?
Sure did.
Now, how did it make you feel if you got booed? Did you make you want to stop or make you like, nah, I'm going back, you know?
I kept on going back because the sister I was dating at the time, I went to the Wagon Wheel one time and got booed. You mean Wagon Wheel?
I've never been there before, but I heard of it. Yes,
yeah.
Sir.
They booed me, and then I left, and then I said, I'm coming back next week. She said, you must really love this because I would never come back after I've been treated like that. But I kept on going, and then I ended up moving. You know, I was talking about, you know, how this I got to the point where I said, man, this city is too small. I need to go to L.A. Went to California.
And then how did that make you feel once you got to the comedy scene in California? You know, did you ever go to Holly Shore's mom's?
Yeah, the comedy store.
Comedy store.
I went to the one in San Diego and the one in L.A.
Really?
Yeah, they had one in L.A., and that was, you know, I'm going to tell you guys something. This is what you call competitive.
Okay. From all over
the country, all over L.A., all the country. Me and my friend would drive, before I moved to L.A., me and my friend would drive down, we would leave San Diego, drive up to L.A., take about 2 hours, so we got there probably about 10, 11 o'clock. There was already line at the door. The door didn't open. And the line in front of the building didn't have the heat. And the hill, sometimes the line would be all the way off in the neighborhood. And at 8 o'clock, no, about 7 o'clock, they would open the doors and they'd give you a number.
Really?
And then they put your number in a hat. So you could go there and wait from 10 a.m. until 7 p.m., and you might not even get a shot. You might not. And then if you do get a shot, you only got 3 minutes. And this happened to me about 2 or 3 times. I'm sitting up here. I got my shot because they put the names, and they put a list out on the back of the wall next to the bathrooms. Mm-hmm. They put your name out, and there were times when, you know, I'm already nervous. There's people in there, you know, executives and stuff like that. And
hold on, this was in the main room? But, you know, I think they had like three different rooms, right? This was the main room?
No, this wasn't the main room.
This is a little small room.
Yeah, but they still had executives in there.
Okay, they did. Okay.
And
for the porn movies, no, I'm sure.
There was probably a lot of those in there, too. But this happened a lot of times. Well, like I said, about two or three times where I'm getting ready. I'm, you know, this person up there finishing their stuff up, and I'm ready to go up next. And then next thing you know, somebody tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, Damon Wayans is here, man. He want to do about 10 minutes. I know what that means.
He's been bumped.
Been bumped, and plus, he ain't going to do no 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah, I heard that sometimes those comedians get there for like two or three. I remember I saw an interview with Dave Chappelle. Dave Chappelle said he got on stage. He was there for 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
What could a comedian possibly do for 4 hours, bro? And there's no way. Can they even be funny that long?
No. That's Dave Chappelle, though. He don't care.
I've heard a lot of them do that. Like, they're like, what? 4 hours? You know
what they do, they're just trying out new stuff.
Right, that's what they say. I saw an interview with Kevin Hart, and they was asking him his process, right? He said what these young comedians don't get or whatever, that those big shows that they do, those are 2 years in the making.
Yeah.
He said they start out in small little comedy clubs trying out the material.
Yeah.
Like he said, they would just pop up at 2 or 3 in the morning, try out some material, and they figure that out, and they go to like a smaller, like little theater type thing, and then they go from there to the big arena.
That's how I know.
It's usually a 2-year process.
Yeah, it is.
Because
I remember when I met Chris Rock, it was right here in Indianapolis at the Crackers. Mm-hmm. I did the show with Chris Rock at Crackers. That was the Bigger and Blacker comedy show. And I didn't know it until I sat there and listened. I said, and there was this one joke. It was so funny. Well, it wasn't funny.
Wasn't funny?
No, because we were sitting in the green room after the show, and we were just sitting there waiting on the money and stuff. And he said, man, what do you think about that joke about, you know, fucking a chick on her period? I said, I don't think that was a good one.
Okay.
Because the punchline was, he said, yeah, I woke up and turned around and looked like somebody got murdered in the bed. And I said,
funny.
Yeah. And I told him, I said, Chris, I don't think that's funny. I don't think you should.
Now, if he would have said something like, yeah, I met this girl, whatever, and we ended up having sex, right? So I went down on her and looked at him. I had a face full of marinara sauce. I'm sorry. I'm a horrible comedian. I just said all that red, that's a little disgusting. Dude, that's gross, but
murder.
So you told Chris it wasn't a good joke. Huh?
Yeah, it wasn't a good joke. And when I started looking at Bigger and Blacker, I said, that's the stuff he did like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
He had been working on that material for because people think you just go up on stage and just start saying funny shit. You don't go up on stage and just, you know, I've seen people have a little beginner's luck. But what they do is they tell some old stock jokes. A stock joke is a joke that's been around ever since your great-great-grandpappy was working in the cotton field.
Like a knock-knock joke?
No, it's like a standard joke. I tell you what, you know Michael Collier?
Yeah.
His whole routine is standard jokes. Jokes has been around forever and ever and ever. But he put his own little twist on them.
So he's like the Puff Daddy of comedy. He's remixing jokes.
Yeah.
You can do that.
Yeah, you can do that. But because people, they're called standard jokes because they will always work. They will always work.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I wish I could think of one. I'll think of one at the top of my head. I'll think of one. It want to come to me, but it's a real little short joke. And it's got a punchline, and it hits you, and then you and you're like, wow, you know. And but I've seen people, you know, do stock jokes all the time, and they'll work. They work because they're proven.
So what made you decide to get out of stand-up?
I told myself I wanted to be like the next Ken and Ivory Wayans or the next Robert Townsend, because your stand up, you do like 5 minutes or you do a bit, and just like if you look at Hollywood Shuffle and you listen to Robert Townsend's old stuff when he was on like the Young Comedians on HBO and stuff like that, when he, you know, all that stuff was his routine. But he just wanted to broaden it and make it into a movie. And I said, I can take my stuff and make it into movies. And that's how I got into film.
Okay, I get it. See, that's why you're here to school these people. So let these comedians know there's a difference between focusing on being a stand-up comedian or being a comedian in the industry of comedy. In other words, when you're a comedian in the industry of comedy, you write jokes for yourself. You write and sell jokes to other people.
Yeah.
You make movies. You're part of scripts. So pretty much, in a lot of cases, this because I used to go through this with rappers. I used to manage. And I used to tell the rappers all the time, bro, that you have to, they all come on and go to the studio. I want to go to the studio. And I would always say to them, like, bro, you got to be able to have a good stage presence. You got to be able to, you know,
timing
everything. So you can't just focus on stand-up. And I think a lot of these comedians now, they think their only way to make it as a comedian is to do the stand-up side. You know, I was, matter of fact, speaking of Byron Allen used to say he made his first money in comedy writing for Jimmy Walker.
Yeah, he did.
He used to write jokes for Jimmy Walker.
Mm-hmm. And just like Paul Mooney wrote a whole bunch of Richard Pryor stuff.
Richard Pryor stuff and everybody else. It's a whole lot of people.
He created Homie the Clown.
See, exactly. That's right. He used to write for Living Color. So you comedians out there, man, the reason why we got these people here on Yizer, man, you comedians out there, bro, because we want you to eat off your comedy. You can't just depend and wait on, you know, stand-up. I mean, it's part of your routine, man, but it's like 101 ways to make money in the industry of comedy.
Yeah. And yeah, you know, you... I was just trying to find a stock joke. Because, I mean, they're just, when you hear a stock joke, you know it's a stock joke. Like Rodney Dangerfield, his whole routine was stock jokes. Almost his whole routine. He wrote some stuff, but a lot of his stuff was stock jokes.
You know what, man? I'm about to give you a title, bro.
What's that?
Your first day. The first day on radio, bro. You're about to be the official comedy historian for the Them Just Jokes channel, bro. We need to do a TV show with you.
Mm-hmm.
And every episode of your TV show is giving a history of comedy, bro. I just had this idea of a TV show.
You know what's so funny is that there was this book called On the Real Side, the history history of black comedy from Burt Williams to retire.
Okay.
But they've made two other different editions. The edition that came after that one was from Burt Williams to Chris Rock. Now the last edition, the third edition, is from Burt Williams to Dave Chappelle.
Okay.
So they just keep on adding more and more stuff.
Yeah.
But when I read this book, and it was it was out of control. I never even knew. I learned about Pig Meat Martin.
Okay.
Mantan. Kind of based on those two characters that Spike Lee did in Bamboozle.
Okay.
Because a lot of those routines came from them, and one of the cats' name was Mantan. And let me see who else. It talked about, you know, how Burt Williams was one of the highest paid black comics in the world, but he had to put on blackface. He was vaudeville, and so what happened was I had to write a research paper, and I did it on black comedy.
And the paper was 10 pages long. This is when I was in working on my associate's degree. Then in the second edition, when he changed it from Richard Pryor to from Burt Williams to Chris Rock, I read the book again, and I added. So I'm gonna make a long story short. I added that paper. I used that paper for my associate's, my bachelor's, and my graduate paper.
Okay.
So I just kept on adding on to this paper.
Oh, so
I was telling somebody, I said, I think I plagiarized my own shit.
That's funny.
Yeah, that's funny.
A stop joke. I'm just going to, because I'm kind of like stuck on that right now. Specific standalone jokes have become common enough to stand as trope. And this can happen a lot. As the jokes work best, they evolve and don't stay the same among retellings. Otherwise, they fall under stock phrases, stock jokes. Yeah. So you know, it's a real, you know, crazy thing. But you know, that's what, you know, comedy is for. It's not for the faint at heart. You have to be courageous to do some stand-up. You have to be courageous because it's just out of control. And so, anyway, we're going to take another quick little break here, and then I'm going to come back on the other side, and then we're going to go ahead and wind on down. So here we go.
Thank you.
All righty. We're back at the Contrarian Corner Radio Show. This is Terrence, the last Magnificent Stubbs, and this is Hello, It's Me, Episode 1. So get ready for Episode 2 next Wednesday, 7 to 9. And I'm going to make sure that we have any, if anybody wants to call in, you can call me right now at 515-605-9800. Give me a call if you just want to just chit-chat. Let me know how to... Oh, I thought I said Wednesday, but I guess I said Tuesday. Yeah, so it's going to be the Contrarian Corner every Wednesday, 7 to 9. So like I said, that phone number once again is 515-605-9800. And just a little more information to give you, like I gave you the last hour. YizerTV.com is looking for product vendors that want to sell their products or services on the YizerTV channel, YizerTV.com shopping channel. Must have a business license. So if you want more details and to apply, just call 847-232-9368. And when it asks you, ask for option, hit option 2. And then we also have a film that's coming out, The Testimony Tube. And this in association with Stephen Lester Filmworks presents the first test of movie called Lifesaver. It's a much watched film if you're considering abortion. And this is going to be Sunday, August 21st. There's going to be a showing at 4. There's going to be a showing at 7. You can get tickets online at Eventbrite. Lifesavermovie.eventbrite.com. You can buy tickets there. And you can also buy tickets via Cash App at The Testimony 2, $ The Testimony 2. Make sure you add your name and time you're going to come, and they'll get those tickets raised for you. Or you can also call 317-520-2725 for additional tickets locations. Oh, and one more thing, the most important thing. It is $15 in advance and $20 at the door. So anyway, we were talking about stock jokes at the end of the last segment. And let me see here. I found a stock joke. Well, I didn't find it. It's a stock joke that Jerry Lewis does all the time. Well, when he was growing, when he was doing stand-up. I don't think he ever really did stand-up. He was just like a goofball. But that was his thing, and that's how he got what he got. And if you don't know this, Jerry Lewis wrote The Nutty Professor. And I remember he was on a TV show one time, and he said that he made more money off The Nutty Professor than Eddie Murphy could ever have. So that's another thing about writing. Jerry Lewis wrote, produced, and directed the original. And he also revolutionized film. But that's another story. But anyway, here's the stock joke that Jerry used to do all the time. He said, the guy was walking down the park one day, and he was just minding his business. And so he ran across a little old guy, and the guy had to have been about 80, 90 years old. And the guy was on the park bench, and he was just crying. And so the guy said, sir, are you okay? Why are you crying? And the old guy looked up and wiped his eyes, and he said, well, I'm married to this beautiful, sweet woman. She's got big boobs. She got a nice ass. And she wants to have sex every night of the week. And the guy said, well, why are you crying?
And the little guy looked up and said, I forgot where I live.
Okay. I guess just me here laughing. But that's it right there. That's a stock joke. You can take that joke anywhere, and that joke will always be funny. So, yeah, so, you know, I'm just like, you know, vibing on here and you know, need to get somebody to call me. Did you hear that joke?
Yes.
That's a stock joke.
And I'm going to give you this.
Yeah, that was an old school stock joke.
Old school, but I get it though.
I thought when Jerry Lewis did that, I thought it was so funny. And what's so funny is that I'm gonna bring this in here and show this to you, but Jerry Lewis was a genius.
I used to love Jerry Lewis.
Yeah. And I'm going to tell you this story because, I mean, I got some time. I got this story. But Jerry Lewis lived in San Diego. He had a boat down on the marina. And I worked in Long's Drugs. And every now and then, I work in a soda fountain. And Jerry Lewis would come into the soda fountain and about once a week, and he would always order chocolate shake with vanilla ice cream, chocolate syrup, 2 scoops of malt. And he would order that all the time. And I knew from experience, because Jerry Lewis was old Hollywood. That means you don't look at him, you don't speak to him, unless he speaks to you. He's gotten people fired from the Hotel Coronado just for speaking to him, because he just don't play that, you know. That's just like those old Hollywood stars, like back, you know, I mean, the heyday was in the 50s. And so one day, Mr. Lewis, he came into the store, and he sat down at the soda fountain, and his wife went back to do some shopping. So I didn't say anything. I just grabbed one of those metal cups to make a shake, and I made the shake the way Jerry Lewis liked it. Vanilla ice cream, chocolate syrup, 2 scoops of malt, whipped cream, and the cherry on top. And he was just sitting there minding his business, and I knew not to say anything to him. I knew don't talk to him. So I took them out, and I gave it to him. I said, there you go, Mr. Lewis. He said, I didn't order that. I said, I know it's on me. He looked at me. He took a sip. He winked his eye at me and said, you're a good man. Ever since then, he would speak to me every time he saw me, even if he saw me out on the street, down at Seaport Village where his boat was, or wherever, he would always speak to me. And so I was getting ready to move up to L.A., and next thing you know, I told his wife, and she said, oh, Jerry's going to miss you. He always talks about you all the time. And so she said, when are you leaving? I said, well, my last day here would be blah, blah, blah. I said, okay. She said, okay. So the next day she brought me this real nice picture of Jerry Lewis that he had signed for me. Okay.
Sorry.
So ever since, you know, so when I left, moved to L.A., his wife gave me a real nice signed picture of Jerry Lewis, and she said it. He was going to miss me and stuff, and I thought that was awesome.
So I heard you say that Jerry Lewis was old school Hollywood, that you didn't look at. What, he was an asshole or something?
He was an asshole.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
So he wasn't humbled at all? His old asshole Jew. Really?
Well, I'll put it to you like this.
Imagine that.
I mean,
so that's why he said what he said about Eddie Murphy. So he didn't really appreciate that Eddie Murphy redid Nutty Professor. And I also found out that You know all the Eddie Murphy movies, he ain't produced or wrote none of them.
Who?
Eddie Murphy.
Oh, yeah, I know
that.
That
shit hurt my feelings,
no,
bro.
No, he shows up and he does his thing.
I think the only movie he might have, and I might be wrong, I don't even think he did 1% of Harlem Nights. I know that he didn't write Boomerang. I thought he did Boomerang. He didn't even produce or write Boomerang.
I think that he did write, along with his brother, and I think Keenan Ivory Wayans has something to do with it, was A Vampire in Brooklyn.
Trash.
Well, yeah.
But what about Boomerang? What about Harlem Nights? And I already knew he wasn't. I know Dr. Doolittle. Hold on, Dr. Doolittle. That was Eddie Murphy, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was Dr. Doolittle.
Wasn't that a jury?
No. No, Jerry Lewis,
Jerry Lewis didn't do Dr. Doolittle also?
No.
Who's Dr. Doolittle?
The original one?
Yeah.
That was Rex Harrison.
So the original Nutty Professor was Jerry Lewis.
Jerry Lewis.
But Jerry Lewis didn't do Dr. Doolittle?
No.
Well, I thought he did Dr. Doolittle.
And Jerry Lewis, he also did, they were trying to do, he wrote, produced, and directed about 20 movies. But he did Cinderfella.
Dana Dane. I'm the rapper Dana Dane with fame.
No, Cinderfella was his movie. It was kind of like the reverse of Cinderella. And he produced the hell out of that movie. But the Nutty Professor, he made a lot of money off the Nutty Professor. A lot of money.
I bet.
So, you said there was going to be a call?
Yeah, I'm about to. They supposed to be calling in.
Is this it? What? Is that her right there?
Yep, that's her.
Okay, she's on hold.
Yep, so what you do?
Your caller, say you got a caller, then say the last four digits.
Okay, well, caller, I got you, and it is 8337. Hello, this is the Last Magnificent. This is the Contrarian Corner. How can I assist you? Hello, caller.
Can you hear me?
I hear you now. Yes, ma'am. Caller 8337.
Yeah, you hear me now? Okay.
Yes,
yeah.
I hear you.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. How about yourself?
Oh, okay. Great. I'm sorry. Oh, good. Just got off work.
Oh, okay.
To the show. I did like that joke, though, by the way, with Jerry.
That joke.
I love
that's
Jerry
old.
Lewis. Oh, my God. I used to watch him. You know, I'm old, but I'm younger. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I love him. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
He's awesome.
I heard y'all advertising. I was actually getting dressed. So.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very long day at work, but I appreciate y'all letting them know about my show that's coming out, the movie that's
mm-hmm.
coming out, A Lifesaver.
Well, so what did you shoot? Are you the director?
Yeah, the writer, director, yeah.
What did you shoot? What did
producer,
you shoot?
All of it. I do everything but shoot the movie. What did I use to shoot?
It was about her.
No. Yeah, I was going to ask. Yeah, I'm still here. I was going to ask you what camera did you use to shoot it with? You didn't do the.
Oh, I'm not Stephen Lester.
Okay. Okay. So, well, tell me, what was your experience?
Yeah.
You know, making this movie.
Well. The testimony to you started back in 2009 when I was inspired by God, of course, to create the testimony too. And I act. I'm an actress, so that's one thing that I love to do, a talent that God gave me. So he had me to do with what I love and mix it in with what needs to be told, which is people's testimony. So that's how I kind of started the testimony to. The original vision that he had me write out was to make test the movies, basically, movies about people's testimonies with them narrating it. So that was the original vision, and I kind of stirred away from it because the internet was kind of getting popular and social networking. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to do this. I'm going to do, you know, have people upload their testimonies. And then, you know, once they upload it, you can have a search engine and you can search, like, what you're dealing with, what struggles you're going through in life. You know, like if you're having an issue with finance or drugs or whatever, you can put that in, and anybody's testimony pertaining to that will pop up. And you would be able to message them and, you know, basically get help. So that person can minister to you and let you know what they did, you know. So that was the whole thing that I was like, okay, this is my idea. This is what I want to do instead of going to the revision that God gave me of doing movies. So this, when I lost my server back years ago, about 5 years ago, I couldn't find the people who had all my stuff, but I have all my testimonies on YouTube. So I went back to the original vision, which God gave me, is making movies, and it just worked. Like, I started February 19th, and it just worked.
Like,
the people, the actors, and it was supposed to be a 10-minute tutorial, and it ended up being a short film with music and everything. So I was, like, just, like, crazy.
That's
but
awesome.
Everything is just working. It just kind of, everything worked. Yeah, so that's what happened.
So did you?
So my testimony is the first one, the testimony. My testimony is what I'm doing. The first one is mine.
So tell me, what was this therapeutic for you to put yourself out there like that?
Not really. Nobody wants to put their stuff out there like that. But I know the story needs to be told. You know, and it's so funny because I didn't even know that this whole discussion was going on about Roe versus Wade. I didn't even know that. Mm-hmm. So somebody was like, you know, they're talking about this right now. I'm like, no, I didn't know. But it's like, it's perfect timing, you know, just like just happened. And I was like, oh, so y'all, everybody tripping over abortion right now. So, and I just have to let them know basically what trusting God looks like because I didn't. Mm-hmm. Trust them, and when I had them, I was like, "Nah, I ain't about to do all that and have another baby. Ain't nobody helping." You know, that was me. It was my mentality. You know, so I've been in that situation of a mother who's struggling. I've been in a situation as a 15-year-old girl who got pregnant, and my sister's pregnant at the same time too. I'm like, I don't want people looking at us crazy because we both pregnant. I'm not having no baby, so it was like a lot of what the world thought of me that more than what God thought of me. And when I finally stopped and like, okay, God, I'm going to do this. I done seen that you done gave me the sign for real. Like, okay, you not about to do this again. And he just blessed me, just continue to bless me no matter what, you know, and just let me know this is what trusting God looks like.
Right.
So that's what the movie's about.
So do you think that it'll hold, do you think that younger girls might be able to learn something from this?
I think younger ones, you still gonna be scared. I mean, I don't know if I would have learned from it at a 15-year-old scared child. I don't know if I would have learned, you know, but I know the seed is there and God's word is not going to go out void. So if he puts it out there, it's for somebody, you know. It ain't going to fall on everybody. Ain't gonna, you know, listen, everybody's not saved. Everybody don't know God. Everybody don't trust God. So that's the whole point. So, and then everybody wants me to like, you need to choose. What do you think they should do? Like, you know, whatever they do with these laws, it doesn't matter. It all comes down to that woman because she's going to get it done illegally or legally, you know. So my appeal is to the women, you know, not to the lawmakers, which everybody wants me to like, well, you think it's wrong? Like, well, yeah, but, you know, I can't tell you what to do. I said, I got too much blood on my hands. I can't tell you what to do. And I was scared. I was afraid. You know, I can't tell you that. I mean, I would like for you not to have it, but I can't make you do it. You know, only thing I can do is tell you what God told me and leave it at that.
Right.
You know, I'm just, that's all I can say. That's it.
It sounds like it's going to be an interesting
film.
That's
my stance on it.
How long is the film?
It is. Oh, it's only about 35 minutes, a 35-minute film. Supposed to have been 30, but I keep adding stuff. Hopefully it won't be 40. But it was so good. It's so funny because my son, who I was going to abort, plays his dad. my niece plays me, and that's the same child that my sister was pregnant with when I was pregnant. I decided not to have it, and she kept her baby, you mm-hmm. know. And it's like my grandkids play their parents, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like everybody, my whole family's basically in this movie. So, I had like a cast of 5, 10 maybe, and now it's like 30. I'm like, where is all these people come from? And everybody trying to get lines. I'm like, no, we just going to do this movie. And uh-huh. it's so funny because it just keeps coming in. I'm like, okay, go ahead. You can say this. But it's like I'm trying to get the message through. But, you know, now everybody is just, it was just crazy, the last one. But it's the editing now. I'm just like praying for him to, you know, deal with what I'm dealing with. Every day, mm-hmm. all the changes I keep putting in the movie, you mm-hmm. know, I'm like, oh, I think we need to do this, you know. So
yeah, well, you got to.
But I'm gonna
learn
that. I want to learn how to shoot. That's my next thing.
Well, what you got to do, you know, and I'll tell you this from being a filmmaker myself, is that sometimes you just got to give birth to the baby mm-hmm. and put it on out there, because you just can't keep adding stuff and adding stuff and adding stuff. You know, you at one point.
Yeah,
you know,
I know exactly.
Just like Basquiat. Basquiat, he hated giving up on his some of his paintings and stuff, but he had to let it go. And I know a lot of painters. I know a lot of poets.
Yeah.
I know a lot of writers. And, you know, if you let a writer keep writing, they'd have a phone book full of stuff, you know. So, you know, so sometimes you got to just.
You're right.
But what you can do, you know, trim it down to a real tight. I haven't seen it or anything like that, but. I would probably want to.
No, it's not out yet.
I'll maybe like trim it down to 20, 25 minutes, and then you can also always have the director's cut.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You want it to be tight. You know, you want it to be tight, and then you know.
I do, and that's what worries me.
And I know you're not the director. But.
No, I am the director.
I'm sorry. Yeah, since you're
I am the director.
The director.
I'm the writer and the director and the producer.
Okay.
I'm just not filming it or editing it. I'm not doing that.
That's what I was thinking. Okay. So you are the director. So what you need to do mm-hmm. is you need to put your foot down and say, everybody can't say something, you know? Somebody got to be an extra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, and we do got a lot of extras. And the person that wanted to do it was my mama.
You got everybody.
I think I want to say this. I'm like, okay, mama. Yeah, but everybody else was good. But it's just like my mom, like, okay. Then she started directing. I'm like, mom, they can't look at the camera. She's like, they need to look in the camera. I'm like, no, they don't.
No.
But
yeah,
it was fun for her to see it mm-hmm. and under, you know. It was fun. That last thing was fun. So it's like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you saw that, because you're not
like,
supposed to be
the camera.
The camera's supposed to be like a lead bar or, you know, it's supposed to be just something. It's supposed to be invisible. You know.
Exactly.
But,
exactly.
So did you feel comfortable giving your name and your Facebook page or your Instagram so people can, you know, follow you and
oh yeah, it's on there. Yeah. On Instagram is the testimony too, and that's all that I'm sure. Let me look, you know, it's a shame because I don't use Instagram that much. But I'm sure it's just the testimony too.
You said it's on Facebook.
And my Facebook is long. Yeah, my Facebook is Michelle Employed by My Vision, Milne Duchesne. It's very long. So I need to change that. It's just been like that forever. But when you go there, Michelle Milne Duchesne, if you just search my name, and that's MIMMS-DUCHAN.
Hold on. It's
MIMMS.
MMS.
MMS. All M. Hyphen Duchesne, Duchan.
Guchan?
No, D is in Delta.
No.
I'm getting ready to text it to D-U. C-H-A-N. I'm going to send it to you. I'm going to send it to Dwayne.
I'll find it.
I'll do a screenshot of my page. And then, so let's come into Dwayne now. Let's see that. And what's your name?
My name is Terrence Stubbs.
Terrence Stubbs, and you're a movie.
Yeah, yeah. You can find me on Facebook under Terrence Stubbs, TerrenceStubbs.
Okay. Yeah, and that's when you see it, I just sent it to Dwayne. That's me and my son. The one who I almost didn't have is on the background.
All right, you about to text it to me, so I'll
got it. Well, Michelle, I tell you, it was really, really nice talking to you, and we're definitely gonna have to keep on promoting your picture here. I mean, keep on promoting your film. And try to take that little advice. You know, try to trim that
down. I appreciate that.
Get the movie up. Get around.
You told me that. Yeah, you're right. And I'm like, yeah, okay. You're right. So, but yeah, this last part, I just had to put this song in it because it actually just speaks to my feeling at the end. And when I actually decided to like, okay, Lord, I give up. I'm listening. So I had to put that song in. It's inspirational. So I had, that's the last song in the movie. So,
okay,
I can't wait. It's almost a month out, the 21st. Today's the 20th. You found it?
Yeah, I just added you as a friend. Here.
And the trailer's there. Like, yeah, and you can scan the like the poster behind you, and you can it'll take you to the trailer.
Okay.
For the trailer, one for the testimony, too.
And the trailer is on geysertv.com also. Watch the trailer on geysertv.com.
Okay.
Did anybody watch the trailer on geysertv.com? And so, Miss Mims Duncan, what I'm going to do is Duchenne. Okay, Miss Duchenne. My time is almost up here, so I'm going to have to let you go and you know, do my bidding.
Goodbye.
And thank you. And we'll have you back again soon. You know, when it gets close to time for it to air, and we'll hit you up again.
All right. Thank you. All right. Thanks, Wayne.
Take care.
All right. See you later.
And you have a nice day.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right. Bye.
All right.
You too.
Oh, she dropped it.
Oh, she dropped out. Okay, that's cool. So if they didn't drop out, you just hit the mute. All right.
Okay.
Which time you got 3 minutes?
All right. So, everybody, I just want to say that it's been real. Had a good time. Everybody, hope you learned something today. And I hope that you, will tune in next week, same time. Wednesday, 7 to 9. And this is the Contrarian Corner Radio Show, episode 1. And I just was letting you know a little bit about me. So the name of this episode is Hello, It's Me. And we had a nice time. I had a good time, talking about different things. But like I said, next week, I think we're going to talk about, chew on some meat. We're going to talk about critical race theory. And I'm going to have a couple of guests call in and talk about, how they feel about critical race theory and how it has affected them. Because like I said, at the beginning of the show, critical race theory is just a boogeyman. That's all it is. It's a boogeyman. You know, just like death panels and just like all that other stuff that people put out there and they want you to buy into and they want you to get into all this stuff. But now what you need to do is you need to do your own research. You need to do your own reading. You need to, look for yourself, because People will tell you anything. People will tell you anything, and they will try to persuade you to do anything. And what you need to do is rely on your own self. Listen to your conscience. Listen to the part in you that is telling you to do the right thing. So I'm going to be signing out here in a minute. So what I would like for you to do is just remember that this is for you. This radio show is for you to have a voice. And it's for me to help you have a voice. And it's for me to help you, to enlighten you, and to just get you to be a better person. And we'll work together on that. So I just want to let you know that, you know, it's been real. I had a very nice time. And we are out of here in 3, 2, 1.
It's not that I